is a line across the island of Cyprus that is far from imaginary. It's called the Green Line and divides the Turkish-held northern part from the Greek Cypriot south. Leased to Britain in the late 19th century by the Ottoman Empire, it was a crown colony after the First World War. Political strife between the island's ethnically Greek and Turkish communities, split roughly 80 to 20% respectively, did not end with independence in 1960. In 1974, troops from Turkey invaded the northern third of the island, forcing many Greek Cypriots to flee their homes. Since then, the Republic of Cyprus, the Greek South, has burgeoned as a popular holiday destination, especially for the Brits, while the self-proclaimed Turkish Republic of North Cyprus, not recognised by any country except, rather unsurprisingly, Turkey, has remained less developed as a tourist destination. This week, there's been a hopeful sign that some kind of rapprochement might be possible, with the Greek Prime Minister, Kostas Karamanlis, on the first visit to Turkey by a Greek leader in almost 50 years, calling for past difficulties with Turkey to be put aside. Here's the Greek Foreign Minister, Dora Bakiyani, in Istanbul, where she was accompanying the Prime Minister on his visit.
This was a very important visit because it was the first visit of a Greek Prime Minister to Turkey after 49 years. As you know, the Greek-Turkish relations face, of course, problems. But on the other side, there has been a very remarkable improvement on the Cyprus issue. We know that this is a very important issue. It is an international issue, Cyprus, as you know. We believe that there will be a window of opportunity after the elections in Cyprus in the 8th of February, so that we will be able, I hope, during 2008 to see some improvement on that.
My first two guests this morning have, between them, seen both sides of the Green Line. Tonya Buxton is a TV presenter and writer, particularly on food, and is from a Greek Cypriot family. With her husband and four children, she is a frequent visitor to the southern part of the island. Nick Redmayne is a travel consultant who also has family in Cyprus. His sister lives in Limassol in the south, but he has recently crossed the frontier to visit the Turkish north to update the Brat Guide to the island. Nick joins us online from Newcastle. Tonya, I was saying that the British have always been very keen on going to Cyprus. What's the appeal?
Well, it's like a home from home in many ways for the Brits, because we drive on the same side of the road, plugs are the same, which makes things nice and easy, and everybody speaks English in Cyprus. And not just for Brits, but people generally, the Cypriots are so welcoming. I think that's what people love so much about going to Cyprus. They have a familiarity, they don't have to learn a new language, and also they feel quite welcomed and enclosed by the culture and the people there.
Because it's so welcoming, and it's sunny most of the year, etc., etc., it's if you like a very good destination. Has that made it too commercialised, do you think?
There are pockets that are very, very popular. I mean, and it depends on what you're looking for. There are a lot of people who actually look for that in their holidays. Me, for example, sometimes when I go there, if I really want to have a holiday, then I'll go to some of the more commercial hotels because right. They've got fantastic kids clubs. It means I will actually get a holiday. Whereas, you know, the more unspoilt places like Laci and areas of Bafo, and there are certain kind of green belts that are not spoilt at all, you don't get those facilities. So it depends on what you're looking for. You can find whatever you want, really. But yes, you know, we've got some great hotels. It's become an all-year-round island now, and they've just recently built some fantastic golf courses, and so there are certain things that I suppose come under the banner of commercial, but it actually just makes it really user friendly.
You talk about that warm welcome and the culture of the island. Is it very different from mainland Greece?
Not really, no. I mean, in the people, not really. I the Greeks are renowned for their, you know, whether they're Greek Cypriot or mainland Greek. The main differences between Greek Cypriots and mainland Greeks are the fact that we are more of a melting pot. Right. And we have, in our culture, in our food, in our history, a little bit more of a Middle Eastern flavour to us because of where we're situated and our many visitors, as it were.
Yeah, I mean, because it has been a crossroads since time immemorial.
Yeah. Everybody
all sorts
wants
of cultures and empires, etc., been there, and we mentioned the British. Nick, you've been to the Turkish-held north part of the island. How different is that?
It's interesting, really. I think I agree with what Tony said. Cyprus is a crossroads, and there is an eastern flavour, and I think that's manifest as soon as you cross over to the north. It's oriental, it's eastern, it's Muslim. That's one of the main differences.
Yeah. And given that, has it been less developed as a tourist centre? Who goes there?
Well, after 1974, the southern part of the island, the Greek part of the island, they really made magnificent efforts in redeveloping their tourism industry. The north, not being recognised by anybody apart from mainland Turkey, really was at a disadvantage. They didn't have the expertise. Their currency was linked to a very volatile Turkish lira, and consequently, things developed at a very slow pace. More recently, particularly after the 2004 vote, the referendum between the north and the south as to whether to accept Kofi Annan's reunification plan.
Yeah,
that has released funds to the northern part of Cyprus, and tourism, it's increased. Still, the main visitors are people from mainland Turkey. Almost 200,000 short-stay visitors from mainland Turkey come to North Cyprus.
And what do they go for? Are they looking for beaches, or what's the big pull for them, do you think?
Well, the main reason that these people travel from mainland Turkey are casinos. Gambling was very popular in mainland Turkey, so popular in fact that the government couldn't regulate the gambling industry, and consequently banned it
and dumped it on northern Cyprus.
Well, yes, so consequently that business has shifted to northern Cyprus, so that's the main reason for that traffic. I mean, after the short stay visitors, the main foreign visitors are British people. About 80,000 or so British people travel to North Cyprus.
Tonya was talking about the facilities that you can get for sort of every sort of holiday in the south, if you like, very built up proper modern tourist destinations as well as quieter places. What's it like in the north?
Yes, it's quite a different feel. I wouldn't say that the north has eschewed mass tourism, but simply it's not something that they're hugely familiar with. So it's not as anglicised. I mean, I agree with what Tonya was saying. There are areas in the south of Cyprus which are almost like green belts, and ecotourism flourishes. But there are areas where it might feel very Anglo, and it may feel as though you're not really that far abroad. You're just in a warm country.
Right.
That's certainly not the case when you cross over to the north, for better or worse, in many instances.
You mentioned obviously crossing from the south to the north. What is that experience like? What is the Green Line?
It's very mundane. In fact, the process of crossing over from the north to the south, or the south to the north. In fact, it depends upon how you arrive. The crossing point in Nicosia, Lefkosia, was the first one to open. And that's a pedestrian crossing, and it's open to pedestrians and cyclists, and it's just a case of walking along, showing your passport if you have an EU passport, and away you go.
And is this policed? Is it right by the UN? Are the UN soldiers in evidence there?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, the most obvious manifestation of the Green Line is in Lefkosia, and there are UN watchtowers. Clearly visible in Lefkosia, and there's a buffer zone dividing the north from the south. It has to be said, when I was there recently, that there was nobody really manning the UN watchtowers, but they're certainly there, and it certainly adds a certain ambience to the experience.
Right. Okay. So, coming back to your speciality, as I mentioned in the introduction, is food.
Yeah.
Greek food, obviously. Is there a difference between Cypriot and mainland Greek food?
Yes, very much so. Again, because of the fact that Cyprus is situated where it is, we've got so many Middle Eastern influences. So we have spices and herbs and foods that would be better associated in many ways with the Levantine cuisine, but have actually been mixed with Greek cuisine and become Cypriot. When you think of hummus, for example, they don't have hummus on mainland Greece.
Right.
And you think of it as something very Greek, but actually it's not. It's a Lebanese dish that we've dipped, rather, that we've adopted and made it our own. So that's the big difference. We have a larger variety of Middle Eastern spices and flavours in our foods.
And does that reflect a difference, if you like, in the atmosphere of the place? Are the people different because they have all these influences?
You would think that a land that's been conquered so much and is still, occupied and under rule that it doesn't want to be under, that these people would be a little bit more guarded, but they're not in no way at all. They're so friendly and lovely, and I've just got to say some of the things that some of the experiences I've had, because I'm British born, but my heart is in Cyprus. I think of home as Cyprus.
Yeah.
And I filmed a series for the Discovery Channel called My Greek Kitchen, and it was filmed solely in Cyprus, but I had a British crew, and my crew, we were there from July till December,
right.
And my crew could not get over how friendly and how lovely the people were. And one of the main things that stayed with us is our sound guy was quite a young lad there, put on nearly 3 stone in the time that we were there, because he said he'd never been so well fed on a shoot in his life. And it actually got to the point. It really was crazy, because everywhere we went to film, especially when we went to the more remote places up in the mountains of Askas, where my husband's family are, we learnt to make some unusual things. We made something called shoujouko there, which is made every year all around Cyprus, actually, at the end of the grape season, and it's like a grape jelly.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is you get thread and you thread lots of nuts along, and then you dip it into this grape jelly, and it hardens, and it's this really lovely sweet thing that you have when you have a glass of wine or a gale beer, for example. And but especially when we went to these more remote places where people, they didn't often see many tourists. Up in Askas, it's up in the mountains, and it's in many ways there's a sadness to it, because it's a slightly dying village. There's lots of old people and young people.
Can you describe a typical mountain village, perhaps like that? As you say, this one may be sad, but what is the atmosphere as you drive up into the mountains?
Well, what's really surprising, especially if you go in the heat of summer, is that you've got that lovely coolness. You've got these lush green trees, because when you think of Cyprus, because most tourists go during the summer season, so think of a slightly more arid land, but then you go up into the mountains and it's very lush and very green, and the air is very clear, and as you're driving along the roads you will come across stalls where people have made glika, which are spoon sweets. You name a fruit or a vegetable and they've made spoon sweets out of them. You get these fantastic aubergine spoon sweets and walnut ones, and or, for example, they might have a fig tree in the back of their garden and they'll set up a table in front of their house and sell them to people who are passing by.
Yeah.
And there's that kind of very old world feel about it. So as we said before, if you want to go into the busy hustle and bustle and where everyone speaks English and it's commercialised to a point but it's user friendly, or if you want to take a step out, go up into the mountains and go to places where people don't normally go when they're on holiday, you have to look for that type of tourism, don't you?
Yeah.
If you want history, if you want culture,
flavor.
You've got to, it's a different flavour, but you've got to go and look for it a little bit. And that's the case in Cyprus.
Okay, and if you go into the north, are there remains of that Greek culture there too that you can see?
Well, again, I was listening to what Tony was saying about the cuisine, and it's interesting on an island which has such an obvious division. In fact, the only divided island in the Mediterranean, and Lefkosia Nicosia, I happen to use two names here, the only divided capital city in the world. It's incredible, but manifest in the cuisine are so many similarities. And what Tony was saying about borrowing from Levant, it's exactly right. It's the same thing in the north. Again, it's just remarkable how many similarities there are in Cyprus.
And what about things like churches? I mean, as you say, the north is now very predominantly Islamic.
Well, absolutely, 98% Sunni. I would say it's a very moderate, liberal form of Islam.
Mm-hmm.
Drinking alcohol is perfectly acceptable in most instances.
Gambling is
May I just say that when you got up to the tower, the Levendis Tower in Nicosia, which is a tower that allows you to look into both sides of Nicosia, which is, it's quite startling, really. Because you go up into this tower and you can see the occupied forces and you can see the Greek side. And what strikes me, and Well, it's an interesting point. It's purely an observation, is that when you look at the Greek side, and you can see the mosques have actually been preserved and restored. And so if you go into Greek, you can see there's lots and lots of mosques, because there was the Turkish cypress, there was quite a few. And when you look into the occupied forces, unfortunately they've desecrated all our churches. They've taken down the crucifixes and turned them into mosques, which is a shame, because it kind of shows you the respect on either side.
Yeah, I mean, there was a mass deconsecration of churches in the northern part of the island, and though in many instances, as Tonya said, the buildings are derelict and, to be honest, inhabited by pigeons and not much else, there are also instances where the status has been changed to that of an icon museum, and you can still go and visit these places, and they are still respected by the local communities.
Okay, that's fine. Briefly, yeah. Just quickly then, from both of you, sort of highlights. Nick first, from the north.
I really liked Lefkosia. I was fascinated by the juxtaposition of the Greek side of the city and the northern Cypriot side of the city. The way that the bastions of the Venetian citadel intruded into the Greek side of the city. Mm-hmm. You look down upon the traffic and the alphabet had changed, and yet here you are, the last divided capital city in the world. Quite fascinating.
Okay, Antonia?
Oh, well, it's too much to put into one sentence. But, you know, one of the one points I'd like to make, that when people do get to Northern Cyprus, is that they are going to hotels that are owned by Greek Cypriots, and right. They haven't given their permission. So if you're happy to do that, then I think that you will probably see something there. But in Southern Cyprus, what's the main thing for me is, because I'm a foodie,
yeah.
The food, oh my goodness, you know, the food is fantastic. And if you want a little tip, when you go to Southern Cyprus, go to restaurants that have the Varkis recommendation, which is a recommendation that the CTO giving to restaurants that have superior quality. Varkis was an ancient gourmet.
Oh, okay.
And so when you've got that Varkis recommendation, it means you're going to get really authentic, proper Greek food, and it's fantastic.
Brilliant. Well, thanks for that tip, and thanks to Tonya Buxton and Nick Redmayne.